The show that doesn't grab them by the but does occasionally kick them in the balls. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. Hey, if you're just joining the show for the first time, where the hell have you been hiding? We have been here a while, covering a lot of stuff, and today we get to follow back on some stories we've went through in the past, like the big power rift within the NRA, Trump and reality, and, well, so much more, including how one guy actually leads foreign policy, and you probably don't even know he exists. Before we get to all of that depression, hey, happy sunny days from the recently finished beautiful Isle of Maui. And when I say recently finished, I mean we've recently finished third overall and first place among our women in the Merry Monarch Festival, which if you have no idea what that is, I apologize. Please get to your nearest search engine now. Do yourself a favor and discover what makes Hawaii so wonderful. Just look for Merry Monarch. Joining me is a guy that has a lot of stuff to celebrate, including his district being the most per capita gun ownership of his entire state. Please welcome recently beleaguered school instructor who loves a standardized test. Please, it's Drew Landry.
Hey, good to be here.
You know, it's so hard to maintain excitement about this week because not only has this week been one of major frustrations in people's, you know, lives, but as far as our work careers, Drew, this week is, it's testing week, isn't it?
Well, yeah. it's getting to that point where we're at the end of the semester, and so it's, you know, everyone's kind of freaking out over finals and a lot of stress happening for students. And, you know, not so much stress for me because I don't have to take those tests, but stress for students. I don't know how you dealt with stress when you were a student. I know how I dealt with stress when I was a student, but I don't know if those ways are still popular anymore. So I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure that raging alcoholism and illicit drug use still pretty much the norm among social among social settings and colleges. I'm pretty sure that that's never changed.
Well, fair enough. I mean, there's a lot of social media stuff they like to do. They talk about all these other apps that I never even heard of. So I'm just, you know, I'll never forget this one student asked me about TikTok, and I said that's a sound that a clock makes. And they just looked at me like, you know, no, that's an app now. It's a social media app. You can do all kinds of stuff. I said, okay. Apparently there's one with a ghost. I don't know anything about this stuff. So
that's Snapchat.
You know, yeah, that one. Yeah.
Oh, God, Drew. Drew, I thought we were going to have a longer show than this, but apparently we need to stop the show right now so I can explain to you how the world has changed in the past, I don't know, decade. But look, all joking aside, as long as we're talking about all of these social medias and ways of spreading information that are out there, one of the funniest things has been happening with the NRA, the National Rifle Association, and that is, Drew, a weird phenomenon where people like me and you that are watching this story through the guise of not only social media, but of normal journalism are seeing one story, and supporters within the NRA base, they have no idea the power struggle that's been going on. So let's start with this headline and go from there, shall we? The NRA is the real-world equivalent right now of the eighth season of Game of Thrones.
You know, I was thinking about that when I read the story. I thought, this sounds so much like that. And I'm, you know, I'm reminded of the first season when Cersei tells Ned Stark, you either play the, you know, when you play the Game of Thrones, you either win or you die. There's no middle ground here. And so that so much applies to Wayne LaPierre and Oliver North, where one, you know, Oliver North was trying, well, I don't know if he was trying to, but it turns out that this is what happened, you know, trying to get LaPierre out in a sense of being the executive of the NRA and Oliver North being the president of the NRA. And he says, look, I got some, I'm going to expose all of our financial problems to all of our members, and they're going to kick you out. And he goes, well, I don't think that's a really good idea because you have a conflict of interest with the firm that you're employed by. And I don't really think that's going to work. So, well, you know, the board comes up and says, nope, we want Wayne and Ollie. Just like what happened in 94 in Virginia, you're out again. So you lose. So this is what happens here. And this whole thing was shaking out. You know, the president goes and talks to him, talks all about how much, you know, he wants as more guns as possible. And then every one of those members has no idea about any of this stuff. And maybe they just don't want to know. And that could be a part of it, too. Maybe they're not, you know, the membership isn't too aware as to what the whole upper echelon of politics going on there. Some of them are just kind of brushing it off, saying, ah, well, you know, so what? Big deal. My issue is the issue, and everything else doesn't really matter. Maybe that's what their attitude is. Maybe that's what, you know, they wouldn't care in the first place. But, we're not going to really know that side of the story because Oliver North's plans failed and he's out.
Yeah. And I mean, as long as we're going through this, the reason I said that this is rather like Game of Thrones is because there's actually two leadership positions at the NRA, one occupied by LaPierre and one occupied by North, both of them secured by the board. Now, because this organization does have a nonprofit status, Oliver North was trying to be very scrupulous about where finances were being spent from a public perception sort of way. So, ideologically, as long as we're talking about this, and I cannot believe I'm using the word ideology with the NRA, but hear me out. Ideologically, this was not a combatant of just what the papers are making it out to be of a simple, hey, one guy didn't like another guy's methodology, so he basically tried to blackmail him out of a job. The board reacted to it and then ousted the blackmailer or potential blackmailer. That's what the spin on this story is going to be. But
yeah.
But when you actually look at the heart of the matter is, no matter what happens to the NRA, this story has shown us something very scary. If you are a white male above the age of 50, you do not care.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're exactly right about that. It's just that, you know, your issue is exactly what you're in lockstep and why you're in that group.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really care that Wayne LaPierre is a multimillionaire and using your due money for that reason, not so much for other types of stuff. And for some reason, they're having all this financial trouble and membership's going down, and yet they keep asking you for money all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, you know, that's upper politics. Don't care about it. I want them to lobby the government over my things. I don't know. I mean, I kind of get what they're getting at because I can see, like, if I was a member of another interest group and they were constantly sending me fundraising letters, I'd say, well, this is just normal politics. If someone found out that, you know, the president was making, you know, 6-7 figures, yet we're in financial trouble, I think that would upset me. But as a part of, you know, of this other group here, they're just kind of like, you know, so what? Big deal.
Yeah. And the thing is that for the base of the NRA, their membership, that plus 50 white guy thing that seems to be taking the country by storm, those guys seem to be very lockstep with, hey, you know what? No matter what the media says, it's all fake. The NRA is a good organization. But let's look over that whole good organization title that these members give them. Because when we explore the story of Oliver North, and LaPierre, can I say that we need to start somewhere back in the 1980s with how Oliver North originally gained his public awareness?
Yeah.
Drew,
yeah.
What would you say if I told you, as a member of a board of a corporation, okay, let's not make it a nonprofit, let's just make this a regular old corporation. I came to you and I said, hey, our new candidate to lead this board to being able to clean up our past terrible reputation within the public our financial misgivings that are causing us to hemorrhage cash just happened to be involved in an international sale of drugs for arms and got caught. Welcome your new boss. What would you do?
I'd tender my resignation and I'd leave. I mean, that would be the absolute thing that you would not want. That's the absolute, you know, just the complete 180. If you're a, you know, member of a board and they tell you, they give you this type of situation, you go, wait a minute here. I don't think this person's going to be in charge of anything. I don't think he should be in charge of a lemonade stand, let alone any type of major organization. Because of all the baggage and all the extra problems that come with him. And, you know, so that, you know, that's, I think that's what people expect. I mean, when you see stories of him, you know, you said, okay, president of the NRA, Oliver North, known for, Contra Iran, the Iran-Contra scandal in the 1980s under the Reagan administration. That's like next to his name, you know, just henceforth and forever. And that's, you know, that's a terrible thing to have on your tagline. But hey, man, that's what he's known for. And that's not exactly the best thing to have on your resume if you're wanting to really turn things around financially. I don't think that's really a good plan. I would come up with a different plan.
Yeah, because as long as we're talking about Oliver North, when he was elected to the leadership of the NRA, let's just be honest, everybody was kind of like, why? And I don't think that that was too far of a kind of a public outcry from what the reality actually deserved. Because
yeah.
Oliver North is not known for somebody being scrupulous with finances, with being scrupulous with ethics, and with being a character of utmost reputable abilities within political circles. He's kind of seen as, you know, the cast off of the 1980s that became kind of a little bit of a buffoon for the Fox Network before gaining some sort of prominence with his plus 50 gun loving base that seems to have no attachment to the reality of the world outside of them other than the threats to their own white privilege.
Yeah, I don't think you're off on that. Yeah, they saw something in him. I think the conflict of interest with Oliver North came from the firm that he was working with, that the NRA contracted out to have their TV, you know, NRA TV station or whatever it was. And even Dana Loesch, who is you know, coming under fire for kind of going off of talking points, because she's supposed to be, you know, a big gun advocate, and she's the spokeswoman for the NRA. You know, even on NRA TV, she's done things with, you know, with Thomas the Train and talking about abortion rights and constantly going and making things, you know, bringing the NRA into a debate where they don't really belong. Where, you know, it's the National Rifle Association. Your debate is within the Second Amendment and that whole realm, not to do with race relations, not to do with abortion issues. And she's having a tough time staying in her lane, if you will. And that's even caused some members to go, you know, wait a minute here. That's going beyond the scope. But let's also not forget there's even some members who think the NRA is getting soft. I mean, you know, because kind of not really given a big thing about bumper stocks, you know, bump stocks, and maybe they're, you know, hey, maybe we're not so bad on gun control. Or it's like, wait a minute here. And if you're a member of that, you're getting kind of mixed signals, and well, they're not hard enough. And then you get into other groups that are a bit even more extreme, like the Gun Owners of America. But that's a whole other. Bag of chips that I want to leave alone there.
Yeah, because you basically just unpacked about 30 hours of stories that we could go through there.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, sorry about that. But
wow, you know, I mean, it's just like when you complain about somebody's dog pooping on your front lawn, and then Drew comes by with his elephant.
What kind of mess do y'all want here?
But it is a big mess. Okay, so getting back to the two central figures in this, before we even throw Dana's actions into all of this, and let's not forget the weird propaganda conspiratorial world of NRA TV. Before we even get into those levels, let's look at LaPierre's behavior, though. This is a guy that has basically made some very racist claims at some of his rallies of, you need the guns to protect yourself from the brown people. I mean Muslims. Oops, I mean terrorists. You have that kind of rhetoric that's come out of his mouth, as well as, time and time and time again, kind of taking the side of the guns versus the victims in certain mass shootings across the United States. William LaPierre is, I don't want to say this without kind of invoking the Little Rascals movie, he is the scum between my toes, as Alfalfa would say. He does seem to go for the lowest common denominator in justifying the NRA's existence. With that said, though, how can you, on one side, proclaim that this is all about the attack on gun culture, the attack on the Second Amendment, the attack on white people, like LaPierre, especially disenfranchised, poorer white people, when you are taking company funds in tens of thousands of dollars for lavish suits, trips, business luncheons with people that have no business talking to the NRA, and, oh, by the way, possibly you may or may not have taken money funneled through the international scene from Russian intelligence. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that point, really, you've got a disgraced general who basically orchestrated one of the largest drugs for guns trading any free government has ever done. And then you've got LaPierre, who shows genuine contempt for the poor as long as they're, you know, not making too much noise and they contribute to him, he's okay with them. But anybody outside of that, he viciously attacks as almost an enemy of the state. With this dichotomy of leadership, Drew, if you're in the NRA, how can you continue to ignore what's happening at the upper echelon?
Yeah. The only way that you could really, and I'm going to try to answer your question in the most sensible manner here. The only way that you could really look at that is say, well, are they lobbying the government on behalf of the Second Amendment as to why I'm in it? If they are, great. If they're not, then I need to get out. And I think that is the common denominator. That's the joining factor. If they're doing what they're doing as what they should be doing, as in lobbying and being my voice and endorsing candidates, then in many's minds, they're just, you know, whatever that other stuff is, you know, I don't care. You know, that if you know, they say they're taking my money, that's all attacks from the media, and, you know, how do I not know, you know, whatever. So I think that is, just to answer your question, I'm trying to put myself in that mindset, that's what I can probably get around. Now, truth be told, I was a member of the NRA. I left the NRA because of things like this. I said, this is the absolute most ridiculous thing I've ever been around, possibly taking money from Russia. I'm not renewing my membership anymore. I'm out. And so there was no way that I was, you know, really ever going to continue to be part of this group.
No.
So no way. You know, these are, you know, people who join interest groups do it because of the cause. And they feel that if those who are critical of the group that they join, that they're attacking them for other reasons. Now, there's a whole other good, you know, points that we can make about the NRA, about being against, you know, trying to stop common sense gun legislation or any type of gun safety measures, those are helpful and healthy debates that need to be had. But the fact that they want to kill it off, that's a sticking point for anybody who might be a bit right of center, or even a bit especially for those who are even left of center. These groups that's as powerful as the NRA really do, and I don't mean to I can't come up with a better analogy here, really like to hold lawmakers hostage over this. And some people live or die by this. Others just don't care. Others want to take them on. And, they've got a very interesting
road ahead,
legislative agenda. So, yeah. And a great following. And I tell you what, they want to make sure that they're a force to be reckoned with. And Wayne LaPierre, as awful as a person as he is, is effective at his job, and he just ousted somebody who was trying to oust him.
Yeah,
and Oliver North is, I had to laugh whenever he became the president of the NRA, because it was like, how fitting, but at the same time how disturbing. So
yeah,
anyway,
and the thing is that we do kind of have to question, when it comes to the NRA, how closely they're following other national trends set forth by the president. Because let's face it, LaPierre and Oliver North would have never been in the position to have the fight that they had over this weekend, where North was ousted, had it not been for the temperature of the room that has been set under the Donald Trump administration. And in another kind of telling way that you can kind of, juxtapositionally look at stories between what the president does in an unrelated manner to what's happening with the NRA, look no further than this Wisconsin rally over the weekend.
Yeah.
LaPierre is, and Dana Leish is a fan as well, of using the term, trumped up conspiratorial theories to incite anger. And in a rally over the weekend, Donald Trump showed up in Wisconsin for a rally where he started to describe how doctors and mothers can execute babies.
Yeah.
Okay, before I even let you explain, like, what he's talking about, can I just go ahead and say a very simple statement?
Go ahead.
Who in their right mind would think that a doctor and a mother will sit down after a birth and say, "So, should we kill this kid or what? Please, find me that office. I want to meet that doctor," because chances are they have an elephant tusk and eight arms. They are not human.
That's exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. I don't even know how to even start this. It's good red meat for his base. Trump knows that Wisconsin is going to be a battleground no matter who the Democrats nominate. And the fact that they have somebody who has a lot of experience in politics and was vice president and Joe Biden, now he's thrown his hat in the ring. He wants to be one, in this battle royal for the Democratic nomination. That somebody like him, or any of the others who want to come out and be real forceful, that Wisconsin is going to be ground zero in this. And so Trump is doing what he can to get his base all riled up by telling them a bunch of lies. And that's the point. That's what the point is. The truth takes longer explanation. The truth is boring to others. And people don't want to hear the truth. They want, give me the 10 word answer that takes about 5 seconds for me to put in my head, and so therefore, if you're a Democrat, you want to kill babies. If you're a Republican, you want to save babies. That's what he's bringing this down to. And so there is so much to unravel. There is so much truth that has to be just brought out in this terrible statement that he made over the weekend. And the fact that he said it, he has no shame, or else I would have said he ought to be ashamed of himself, but he has no shame, so it doesn't matter. But
no.
But here's where we are. OBGYNs, and I need to preface, I need to qualify all this thing. I am not a woman. I don't have a uterus. I could never be a woman. So I hope that hope women who are watching can say, hey, all right, well, at least he notifies that. Very good. So OBGYNs, Shaggy was giving me a really funny face there. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, your face alone, if I'm a woman and I'm like, this guy's going to talk about my uterus, unqualified.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
All right, but you got like 60 seconds.
Okay. Well, all right. So OBGYNs typically say, look, late-term abortions is a terrible term to make. Those that make it after the 24th week of viability typically are only going to have the abortion when something is terribly wrong with the pregnancy. It's not because they just simply say, okay, I don't want to do it anymore. All right. And the notion of infanticide is illegal. This doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. And he just said those things in Wisconsin to get everybody fired up, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, you know, because here's the thing. It's a lie. It's pretty much made up on the spot. And when we really talk about all the things that Trump brings to any sort of political discourse about a woman's uterus, it's unqualified. Stay with us. When we get back, we have got a lot more stories to cover, including, oh God, it's time to talk about DC. We'll be back. It's the Shaggy Chicken Show.
Get informed. This is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back to it. Hey, if you missed anything from the first half of the show, or you were just a little bit cringy during that part where we talked about lady bits and want to go back and make sure you got the true facts, find us, because not only are we available through our website, shaggyjenkins.com, but we're also on social media at Shaggy Live, and you can find us basically on everywhere else. Spotify, iTunes, what have you. Just look for the Shaggy Jenkins Show. This guy coming from the West Texas district of West Texas. I just messed that introduction up. A guy that knows grammar and education way better than I ever will. Please welcome Drew Landry.
Hey, I'm glad to be back. Let's do it again.
Yeah, because now we have to talk about one of those weird things that happens in government from time to time, the death of a statesman. And today's, well, I guess I could say the big story of the week should be the death of one Luger. Not the gun, but Ron Luger. And here's the thing.
Richard.
But I'm going to go ahead and say something. One, I'm just now learning this guy exists. Okay, that's sad. And here's the thing. If you're a political show and you don't know who this gentleman is, I'm just going to go ahead and say the 3 or so minutes I had to kind of Wikipedia him before this news segment, I am ashamed that we don't talk about him a lot more often. But when it comes to his death, I kind of want to say that, Drew, it seems the state of Indiana is particularly sad. Why is that?
You know, I grew up in Southwest Indiana, and I spent a lot of my time there as a young man and growing up and all that. And there were a couple of names that you always learned when it came to Indiana politics. And one of them was the name of Bai, you know, Birch Bai and his son, Evan. And the other name you learned was Luger, and it was Dick Luger. Full name Richard Luger. He was the mayor of Indianapolis for a few terms. He ran for the Senate seat against Birch Bayh in 1974. He lost, and then 2 years later in 1976, he defeated Tom Hartke, and he became the Indiana senator from 1977 to 2013, and he didn't even have an opponent when he in 2006. He was incredibly popular. This is a guy who has done so much, not just for Indiana but for the entire country. This is a guy who he chaired the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate. He helped negotiate a lot of arms deals with the former Soviet Union and with Russia. This is just an absolute statesman who both parties admired. A lot of Hoosiers, they're people from Indiana, that's what we call Hoosiers. They admired this guy, deeply respected. So it's not like that, you know, this is just, you know, just an old guy who just, you know, passed away, which would be terrible for life in and of itself. But the fact that this is a guy who's been a great deal of his life in public service, gave a lot back. He served in the Navy for 3 years. I could go on about him and talk more because he's done so much and so he is very much going to be missed. This is a guy who compromised with liberals on the left. He compromised with his own party a lot of times, and that eventually led to his primary loss in 2012, which we can get to in just a bit. But yeah, this is a guy who was deeply admired and heavily respected.
Yeah, because I just wanted to touch on some of the things that you brought up there, because in Mike Pence's chief hoser of the Hoosier State, his statement, Mike Pence actually said something that, okay, please don't let this be the last time that I say this on the show, because I would really like to have a government that works. The vice president actually said something that made a lot of sense when he mentioned Lugar's contributions to foreign policy, specifically having to do with the Cold War. Now, Drew, for the most part, a lot of us are taught that when it comes to who ended the Cold War, well, of course, that was the policies of the Reagan administration. That's what we're taught, and especially in southern states. Ronald Reagan ended the Cold War. All by himself, all with like three key speeches during the one of them in the first tenure and then two of them in the second tenure of his presidency. With those three speeches, Ronald Reagan ended communism as we know it. That's the common logic. But when you actually look behind the scenes of what happened, it looks like when it comes to Dick Lugar, who, by the way, does kind of have a name that sounds like he should be a secret agent, or at least some sort of double agent spy. I mean, come on, you know, you're sitting there. Gentlemen, look who it is. It's Dick Lugar. You know, I mean, he just sounds badass when you think about it. But this is a guy that literally walked into a very tumultuous relationship between the United States and then Soviet Union and said, you know what? I know you guys got a lot of issues to hash out, but I'm here to talk about nuclear arms, and I'm not leaving here until we have an agreement. Can we just all take a moment, and no matter what side of the political aisle you stand on, just admire the audacity of a man who thinks he can save the world from nuclear annihilation?
Yeah, he was successful on so many attempts of that. I mean, he was the guy who you brought in on the treaty negotiations, especially when it came to nuclear disarmament with the Soviet Union and even Russia. So he played a heavy part in that. You know, whenever he was chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, he had to be involved in these things. And even whenever he was just on the committee, you needed his help because of the connections that he had, of the way he was able to deal with people. His negotiating skills are far better than anybody else's in Washington, D.C. That's just how he, that's what his career was. It was, you know, yes, he could be a political animal and he could fight things, because if you look at pictures of him, you think, what a cute little grandpa, I want to put him in my pocket. But at the you're putting in a ferocious political animal who knows exactly what to do. And so it wasn't always nice little grandpa sitting in a rocker. I mean, this is a guy who had no problem rolling up his sleeves and doing what had to be done to get the policy going. So that description that you made is a tough guy, is the correct description there, and of one whose negotiating skills are, you know, far surpass anybody else's.
This is what I'm going to bring up, because we were talking during the break, and for people that actually follow us on social media, they saw all this conversation. But yeah, to the people that are only listening to us on the radio, this is not going to make any sense. But Drew, could you say that Dick Lugar was the koala bear of American politics?
Yeah, I think that's probably a really good description of that. Yeah,
because from an outside perception, he's cuddly, he's warm and fuzzy looking. You think, oh God, he's so adorable. But if you're in Australia, you know that koalas are vicious, vicious creatures. They actually have legends of them. They call them drop bears, you know, drop bears, because they're actual literal bears that will drop from trees and eat humans. They have a different perception on that. And when it came to Dick Lugar on the international scene versus the domestic scene, domestically, he was the cutesy koala bear. Internationally, he was fangs and claws drop bear koala bear. That kind of does make him the koala bear of the Republican Party.
Yeah, it really did. And he had no problem compromising with Democrats, especially when it came to, you know, voting for Supreme Court nominees. I mean, he voted for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He voted for Stephen Breyer. And when he was, you know, when that would be brought up to his face, you know, they would challenge him on that. Why'd you vote for these liberal justices? He goes, well, look, I would expect the other side to vote for my party's nominees, so I voted for theirs. That, you know, this is how trades work, and you do something for them, and then whenever, you know, your party's president, and then they nominate somebody, they'll vote for them too. It has nothing to, you know, his idea was, are they qualified? Not so much about ideology and you know, interpretation so much as it was, are these judges qualified? So, and that, in a sense, got him into trouble when he ran for re-election for his what would have been his final term in 2012, when he got primaried, because he was being labeled as not conservative enough. When you look at his record, it was a conservative record, and he was proud of that. But they said that, you know, he was too close to Barack Obama, well, then President Obama, and he was Obama's favorite senator. I mean, they really lined him up with the fact that he worked with Obama to get a nuclear arms deal with Vladimir Putin and Medvedev, and, you know, that they made that a political issue. The fact that Lugar was a statesman and was able to help a Democratic president get a nuclear disarmament deal with Russia, that is somehow a problem, and that eventually led to his losing in the Republican primary. It was just an odd thing to really watch and play out. This guy who 6 years earlier didn't have an opponent, and, you know, 6 years later, well, he's, you know, he ends up losing. So such a weird turn of events, and that's just, you know, that was the beginning of the Republican Party.
Yeah, because
that we know today,
because this was the post Tea Party invasion of the Republican Party. But here's the thing that always kind of confused and confounded me. Look, when it comes to his negotiation with Putin and Medvedev, the big bear of Russian government, who ended up turning over presidency back to Vladimir Putin because Putin did it better anyway. But these two guys, they were not political novices. And neither was Dick Lugar. Keep in mind, this is the same gentleman that dealt with Gorbachev. This is the same gentleman that dealt with a very drunken and unruly, very hard to maintain and keep on agenda, Boris Yeltsin. And then he also was the one that kind of came up, just like Al Gore did on the Democratic side, kind of came up with the earliest indications of, we need to watch this lieutenant governor out of the western districts of Russia. He's going to be president one day. He's talking about former KGB agent and, at that time, current FSB agent and Lieutenant Governor Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you're exactly right.
So it's so funny to me that he went from being literally the key instrumental guy when it came to dealing with Russian nuclear armaments to puppet of the Democrats, which, keep in mind, Republicans went to him time and time again because he had such good ties to all these people and he could get things done. The reason why is because he talked, he communicated. And this is what I want to ask you, because, Drew, we spend a lot of time here lately talking about, especially President Trump, the legacy of John McCain. Now, of course, on their side, there's a lot of disdain. Oh, he worked with the Democrats. And it seems like they're heaping on to McCain the type of pressure that back in 2012 they heaped up on Lugar. Is it possible that Indiana could consider Richard Lugar to be their version of a John McCain, I believe in the process, but I'm conservative at heart politician?
Yeah, I think that's exactly how he'll be viewed. That's one of the best ways to really look at it. I mean, it's just what I said at the beginning. There's two names that are ever so revered in Indiana politics, and it's the Bies and it's the Lugars, and they are there they are. I mean, they are, there's whatever you can achieve as a politician or as a public servant, but you'll never reach the level of Bies and of Lugars. And they, these are statesmen. And, they were. And with the state of politics being where they are today, I don't think it'd be really tough to see them again. I mean, I don't know how Hawaiians felt about the death of Daniel Inouye, and forgive me for butchering the pronunciation of his name, but that kind of reverement is something that you could feel about Lugar, McCain, all of these types of leaders. So his legacy is going to be being able to reach across the aisle, Senate Foreign Relations Chair and foreign policy guru, master, and that's what he is.
Yeah, and just to let you know, Senator Daniel K. Inouye actually has an airport named after him now. That's what
Very
we
nice.
Felt about him. That's exactly how we felt about him. And then, of course, we have a special attachment to what we call the Fighting 442 and 100, the Go for Broke Battalion. If you ever want to know some of the very interesting history of Hawaii, we had enslaved Japanese people fighting for us during World War II from Hawaii.
Yeah.
We actually had slave soldiers, you could say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
World War II, by the way, just throwing that out there. Greatest generation, not so that great in how we treated some people. And that's something.
Absolutely.
That's something that Dick Lugar kind of had a special sense of. And when it came to his foreign dealings with stuff, this is the thing. Lugar, and I'm going to transition into our next story here, which is going to freak people out. Whereas Lugar had a kind of a Morgan Freeman, godlike Bruce Almighty approach of, if you do things properly, the world sorts itself out. You don't have to micromanage things.
Sure.
Lugar, when it came to world politics, thought in those type of subtlety. Make sure that the basics are covered. Make sure that diplomacy is always met with diplomacy. And all the bigger stuff will just figure itself out.
Yeah.
Now, this is a guy that inspired a lot of confidence. But when it comes to who is actually leading right now foreign policy, it's a broadcaster on the Fox News Network named Lou Dobbs. How the hell did we get here, Drew?
I wish I had a good answer for that, but I actually have the answer for it. It's the fact that he, Dobbs started out at CNN, and started talking in the mid-2000s about illegal immigrants. And that caused a lot of people's heads to turn and going, what the heck? And that gets the – and he was much more conservative than a lot of other of the talking heads on CNN. And he's now drawing audiences from the Fox network onto his show. And come in 2009, he actually leaves Fox. He leaves CNN for Fox. And, well, Donald Trump, now President Trump, was watching him, liked his narrative, liked his commentary. And, well, he just starts really digging into the what he calls the great Lou Dobbs.
Yeah.
And you just got to shake your head and go, what's so great about him? I mean, he's married a Mexican American, and now he's all bent out of shape and gets mad about undocumented immigrants who are here. He's incredibly upset and blames a lot of the problems of that we have upon them, which I guess maybe that's why Trump liked him so much. So, I mean, he even, and this was one of the weirdest things that I had to, really read twice to make sure that I got it right. That he had a meeting with economic advisors and other people in the White House. He calls Lou Dobbs and says, just interested in having your perspective too. Believe me, I'm all about getting as much advice as possible over an issue. I'm all about that. But leave it to professionals, not to a talking head media type. What? So, Dobbs is now, and I hate to say this, but he's now some sort of a kind of an advisor, I guess. I don't know of a better word to really say it to the president on things. I mean, he's made it very clear that he watches Fox and Friends. He watches really, I mean, I just want the president to know he does have a job to do. He does have the country to run. I don't know what time he has to really sit back and eat some hamburgers and watch some Fox Business News and watch all Lou Dobbs and Fox. I need to calm down. I'm getting
really upset. I know. But see, here's the thing that people don't realize is when it comes to Lou Dobbs' program, watch his program, then count to 10 and go over to Twitter and open up Donald Trump's tweets. Because what they're noticing, and this is the kind of pattern that people around the world are even noticing, this network personality, this guy that has no qualifications in foreign diplomacy whatsoever, is leading the president almost as if you would lead a pig by a hog ring through its nose, through some very weird and unscrupulous foreign policy debate. And I'm just going to throw this out there. If I'm sitting in a room, okay, and I want just, let's say, an outside opinion, because, it's an outside opinion. Drew, I am more likely to call up somebody like Gary Busey than I am Lou Dobbs, just because I have a feeling that Busey's answer, while not correct, just like Lou Dobbs' answer is not correct, at least Busey's answer would be a lot more entertaining.
I don't doubt that at all. I think if I just said a half sentence and let Busey try to finish it, and then he just goes off on some type of diatribe, that would be more entertaining and just as effective as asking for Lou Dobbs' answer or advice on something. Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, just picture it in your head. You know, you're in this room, you're meeting the president, you know. He picks up the phone and he goes, let me call this guy from Fox Business News. And then this guy proceeds to go through something that is tailor-made for about 3% of the population of white people in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that is on his talking points because he knows that those are the clientele that he needs to cater towards so that they can sell ads and maintain viability as a network. He utters that line of talk towards the president is actual credible foreign diplomacy.
So it's scary.
It is, because once again, Gary Busey is still available. I'm just saying this because, I mean, imagine. Okay, so Lou Dobbs, we know this. By watching his program, by watching his online persona and everything manifest itself in all of its weirdness, he is very much an American first secret white supremacist.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the only way that I can narrowly explain this in the time that this show allows. There is a lot of big concepts to Lou Dobbs' persona. All of them boil down to he thinks if you're white, you're right. Everybody else, stay back. So, with that line of thinking, you call up Lou Dobbs and you say, hey, look, we have a southern border crisis. What do we do? Of course, his response is going to be xenophobic. It's going to be absolutely aggressive towards people in a surgical, racial type of sense. Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's going to resonate with the president because, oh, that sounds like a good idea.
Yep.
Versus calling up Gary Busey, explaining to him what the southern border crisis is, and having him just go for a second, let me get this right. Explaining it seven more times to Gary Busey, and then having him come out with, well, you just got to take their buckets. What? Never mess with a man's bucket. See, today we go for the buckets, tomorrow the tacos. They'll never mess with us again. Thank you, Senator Busey. I mean, you know, it's like,
yep.
I don't mean to make fun of Gary Busey, but I do. And yes. The thing is that taking a man's bucket so that tomorrow he doesn't come back with a taco is just as sensible advice coming from Gary Busey as it is from Lou Dobbs. And it is the bucket and the taco. Well, first, we attack the things that they're coming here for, buckets or jobs. And then we attack the taco or their culture and their identity as a culture. So even though Gary Busey came up with this weird thing of taking their buckets and tacos, that's essentially the same kind of logical sense that Lou Dobbs' argument makes. Am I wrong? Yeah.
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. You're right when you say calling Gary Busey would be more entertaining, because I can just imagine that phone conversation and how hilarious that would be. But you're exactly right, though. Whenever you say that, you know, Lou Dobbs has got this type of influence over the president that is just so bizarre. You know, where did he come up with the national emergency from? We're finding out there's a direct correlation between Lou Dobbs saying it, and then about later in the evening, you have the president saying, we're going to cause a national emergency. Yep. You know, Lou Dobbs calling for the firing of Kirstjen Nielsen. And same thing with Stephen Miller. You know, they're calling, you know, there, and then next thing you know, she's gone. Well, what in the world? You know, it's, I just want to scream into some paper bag, abyss, something, yep, and just ask, who is running this government? Because it's obviously not the president's advisors, and I don't agree with this president. I know that's shocking news, but he doesn't have the worst advisors in the world who actually have governmental experience. And, you know, he's got a Council of Economic Advisors. He's got a whole bunch of people who actually know a thing or two about this, who can give him advice that is much more qualified than a talking head on a TV show.
Yep, and that's where we got to end this talking head show. Until next time, call us, Gary Busey. See ya.